Good morning. I'm Coach Jake, and we call all the pastors here at Maywood coaches because Jesus gives all these amazing gifts, like design, like Rachel was talking about. Like we saw Dwayne was subbing for Nick, who's sick today in the drums, and Dwayne is also the guy who, in Kairos, our Hispanic church, when they need help with the building, Dwayne's an architect. He's been helping them on all sorts of ways. There's all of these gifts at Maywood, and as coach, I get to see them. Sometimes you guys don't get to hear all these stories, but God has gifted you guys in so many ways, and it's so much more than any one of us could display, right? And the whole vision here is that we're going to accept on faith that, like, yeah, God has put something good in me, and I have a spot on this team, and that together we can look like Jesus. So that's the whole idea of Maywood. If you want to be a part of it, like, then be a part of it. Like, start showing up with, like, here's what I have to give, and coach me in it, you know? We would love to get a chance to do that. Today, I want to talk to you a little bit about my experiences, an experience I had growing up, a Chiefs fan. I was born in the 80s. I was born in 1985, so I grew up in, like, the Schottenheimer era, you know, of, like, incredible defense. But we'd always make it to the playoffs. We'd always be dependent on turnovers. This is like a super stressful way to watch the game, like needing them to fumble or get an interception. And a lot of getting to the playoffs and losing. And that was my whole upbringing. You know, like we made it to the playoffs every year almost, and we lost. And as I went through that also, though, there was this moment. I remember one of those years I was going to church right after we'd lost a playoff game like a week or two before, and if you weren't young in the 90s, I don't know if you guys will remember this or not, but so starter coats, yeah, were like the big deal in like 1995 or whenever, and so I'd begged and pleaded and finally gotten a starter coat about a year after they'd first hit. And in true Taylor family fashion, like, we've purposely bought it too big. And I knew, like, I'm going to wear this until it's too small. I mean, that's just the way it would go because it was a fancy coat. And anyways, I had a Sunday school teacher that just, it took me a while to even understand what he was saying to me at church. So I came in wearing that coat the Sunday after they'd lost. And he just starts going on and on about what a great fan and person I am. And suddenly I realize, oh, it's because I'm wearing this coat, and he, like, expects that, like, I wouldn't wear Chiefs stuff, like, the week after they lose. It took me a while to catch up with that, because that was my winter coat. Like, when we bought it, I was committed. Every time it's cold, I'm wearing this coat. Like, it has nothing to do with whether they win or lose. Like, I'm a Chiefs fan, and when it's cold, I wear this one coat that I have. Whereas he thought, like, oh, you must, like, really care. For me, it was like, I didn't think about it even. You may have had an experience where someone came up to you and they were so respectful and so shocked about something good you were doing. And it took you a while to realize, like, oh, like, this is really hard or a challenge because they're struggling with it. But for me, it's become easy. Like, I didn't even think about it. For some of you, you might be struggling with a lot of things right now. You think, oh, I'll never be like that. But give yourself some time, and there'll be things in your life that other people will look at and respect, and you won't even notice them, right? Because most of us, we walk around with these monkeys on our back, these temptations, and we're just telling ourselves, like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do that thing. You know you shouldn't do that thing. And it just, like, exhausts us. That every 30 seconds we're thinking about that thing we don't want to do and telling ourselves not to do it. But there is the possibility to go from this, like, it's just all you can think about, to, like, straightening up and it's not on your back. And big pieces of time pass and you don't even realize you weren't even thinking about it. And so just like for me, wearing the coat was no big deal. I didn't even think about not wearing the coat. Like, it wasn't even an option to me. And whatever monkey is on your back today, you can get to a spot with Jesus to where it's not even on your mind anymore, where you're truly free from it. That's an incredible piece of hope that you have to bring to the table today. Do you really hope that Jesus can set you free from the sin that you're struggling with right now? And if you have that much hope, then I have an awesome passage to share with you that gives us some real practicality. How do we get to what those good things are that Jesus wants to give us? So we're in 1 Peter still. We're in 1 Peter 4 today, starting in verse 1. It has this big, important word at the beginning. It says, therefore, since Christ has suffered in his body. All this amazing love that we were just singing and celebrating about. Sometimes when we hear people offer us really nice or kind or good things, we doubt it. So we think, like, that's too good to be true. That has to cost more than what you're saying. But the reality is the love that God offers us and the relationship that he offers us, it did cost super incredible an amount. That Jesus had to pour out his life to offer it to us. So it says, because of what Jesus did, how he physically hurt for us, that's going to mark the rest of this passage. If you notice, all through 1 Peter, it's a big theme. Jesus suffered, so it changes the way we act. So that's, again, today's theme. It says, because Jesus suffered in his body, arm yourselves with the same attitude, because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. That's the promise. We're going to get back to it. We're going to read through some more verses. We'll get back to this one. As a result, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil human desires, but rather for the will of God. Here's the first question I want to hit you with today is, who or what are you living your life for? It's very easy to kind of mail in an answer. I'm living for my kids, or I'm living for my family, or I'm living for God. Don't just assume that you know right off the bat what you're living for. A lot of people live for their own evil junk inside of them, their own fear, their own pride, their own comfort. Rather, for the will of God. Verse 3 is going to tell us a little more about it. It says, for you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do, living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, and detestable idolatry. What is that all about? It's saying, for you have spent enough time. It's saying in your old life, you could see who you were living for because you just had to watch where you spent your time. And for you today, if you want to know who or what are you living for, then the real question is, how do you spend your time? What do you do with the time that you have? Some of it's really obvious, you know, this list here, a lot of things involving drunkenness, crazy sex, adultery is this idea of setting up other things as God. That's what pagan, that whole title there, pagan, gets at. It's having a bunch of gods or untrue gods, not worshiping the real God. And whether your time fits on this list or not, how are you spending it? Every single one of us this last week was given a gift from God, a very specific gift that we all shared exactly the same amount. We all had 168 hours from, you know, 11:35 last Sunday to right this moment. Every single one of us were given the same amount of time. Now, how we divided that time up, how many hours we spent sleeping, how many hours we spent reading a book to our kids, how many hours we spent at the gym, how many hours we spent looking at pornography. I don't know what you guys are doing with your time, but we're choosing, like, how do we spend the time that we were given, right? And if you look back at how did you spend all of that time, then it shows you who are you following. What is your life about? Because your life is a series of moments. I mean, it sounds like it's just like some little catchphrase or Hallmark card, but that's all of you. All of you is a string of how you spend your time. And so however you spent your time last week shows you who you were following last week. Think about it. Think about the specifics of what did you do. Let's read on here a little further. It says, other people, they're surprised that you do not join them in their reckless, wild living, and they heap abuse on you. So if you're following the way of God in this last week, there should have been some friction with people who aren't following the way of God. Not friction like you started in an argument with them about how great you are and how they need to change. Friction over they're doing a bunch of stuff that you don't want to do. They're doing a bunch of things that you don't participate in. The things that they glory in or are most excited about are things that repel you. Or the humbleness that you bring to a situation or apologizing or something like that, they can't understand it. Did you have any moments like that in this last week? Verse 5, but they will have to give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. Every single one of us at the end of our life, we're going to have a time where it's actual judgment time. Jesus and you face to face, and it's a, how did you respond to me? What did you do with what I gave you? That's the real grade on our life. It's not how we feel about it. It's not what other people say about it. So what is that face-to-face with Jesus? How does he respond to us? Final verse 6 we're going to read, it says, for this is the reason the gospel was preached even to those who are now dead, so they might be judged according to the human standards in regard to the body, but live according to God in regard to the spirit. And this verse might be referring back to that verse we read last week about preaching to spirits imprisoned. The thing I want to just pull out from here in the previous verse, though, is that Jesus is the real decider of what matters, of what was time well spent. It's real easy for us to feel like we're the boss of our life. But Jesus is the one who really decides, did you do it right or not? So I want to jump us back to verse 1. This is our key for the whole day. Therefore, since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves, put on this gear with the same attitude, because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. If you're leaned over today with this monkey on your back of some sort of temptation that you can't kick, and the way this temptation works, it's an addiction, whether it's a substance or not. All of us in the room are sinners, and we've all been on the same train before, but I can tell you the highlights. It's a circle, or maybe like a spiral down is maybe better. But it starts with, you see some sort of shortcut, see some sort of thing that is not the right way to do it, but it seems like it's going to feel good, or you're afraid it'll hurt if you don't, or something like that. So you do the shortcut, and in the end, it doesn't turn out as well as you hoped, or it leaves you hungry, or it leaves you feeling shame, leaves you with some sort of hollowness that needs to be filled, right? So then you do the thing again, and then you get the same hollow feeling. Then you do the thing again, and it's just like boom, 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 boom. And you get more and more dependent on it and less fulfilled, right? The promise gets smaller and smaller of what it's going to give you, and you take more and more, like bigger and bigger bites of it, if that makes sense. So the sad thing about us is we all understand that. Like, I don't really have to explain it very deeply because we've all done that a bunch. We've all been stuck on that ride. And eventually, when you try to get off the ride, you just get so bent over with this weight on your back that's saying, nope, you're not strong enough. You need to do it right now. You need to do it right now. You need to do it right now. Or you're telling yourself, like, don't. And maybe eventually it gets to, like, there's 5 seconds in between your don'ts or an hour or something. But it's still, like, it's always there. Like, it's this prison cell that you're in of temptation, right? You're not enjoying things, you're just avoiding doing the wrong thing. Some of us get so sick of that we jump back in the wrong thing just to get out of feeling that monkey on our back, right? Because we don't know any other relief point. So if you've been there before, this verse is giving you a really clear step path out of that. There's a wisdom here that other people have picked up on, and they've kind of coined the phrase, like within AA, it'll talk about contrary action. It's a lot of what this is talking about. There's a wisdom just to any sort of contrary action, but the amazing thing about being a Christian is we don't just have the wisdom, like the shell of wisdom. We got the fullness of the Holy Spirit in it too. So we're doing contrary action. We're not just saying no to ourselves. We're opening up space for God in our life. We're opening up space with that hope that Jesus is going to come in and fix us. But you got to expose your heart to Jesus. And strangely, physical pain or suffering is the pathway here. And most of us, when we're struggling, we're thinking, I need more comfort. I need a fix. I need something to take care of me. And the last thing we would think is, I need some pain to help me in this moment, right? But if you can get to that crucifixion moment for yourself, that like, I'm done doing it my way, I'm humble enough, I'll do it God's way, then you can say, I'm going to take the path that Jesus took. And the path that Jesus took was, I'm willing to suffer to follow God. If you're here today and you're saying, I'm willing to suffer to follow God, then the idea here is freedom from sin is a real possibility. It's powered by Jesus, but we have an action to take. How do we get free? What are you talking about, Jake? I'm saying you purposely choose to suffer like Jesus suffered because it's going to change your heart. And you might be like, well, Jake, suffer like Jesus suffered. Like, what does that even mean? If you've been around here very long, you know I love practical stuff. So I'm going to just give you like super practical. You're going to know whether you did it or didn't do it very clearly. Now, is the stuff I'm about to say, like, is it from the Bible directly? No. Is it something you need to feel guilty about if you don't do? No. I would view it more as, like, Jake's about to open up three doors, almost like a game show, and you get to pick, like, do you want to walk through one of those doors or not? I believe Jesus will work on your heart if you walk through any one of these three doors with the reasons we're talking about. And even though it's not straight out of the Bible, it is rooted in Isaiah 52 and 53. When I thought about how did Jesus suffer, I went back and spent some time there this week. And I picked out, here's three ways that Jesus suffered in big ways, but I know I'm not on Jesus' level. We're not there. So I picked out like some baby steps. How can we take a little step towards suffering like Jesus suffered, right? Because Jesus wants to take us on this journey to be like him. You're not gonna be like Jesus in an afternoon, right? But you can take a step each day this week to being more like him. So here's our first idea. Got this guy in this funny coat. Here's my first idea for you. How could you suffer like Jesus? Isaiah talks about Jesus in his appearance was so, nothing in his appearance drew people to him. You almost get this idea that like Jesus was ugly when you read in Isaiah, like that he was an unattractive man, even though all the pictures and everything. But my guess would be Jesus, his nose didn't look good or whatever. I mean, something was off physically. So one of the ways Jesus suffered is in his physical appearance. I picked this guy's coat, so sorry whoever this guy is. But my thought for you guys is, what if you would wear something this week that you think is lame? You wear something that we all have, that shirt in our closet or something that's like it's still there, but I don't like how it looks. I feel stupid, I feel silly when I have it on. Now, what could possibly be the benefit of wearing something lame for a whole day? Well, the reality is a lot of us, myself included, we get this pride of I'm beyond caring what people think, I'm not too worried about my appearance. You know, that was like middle school or high school. But you put on some sort of clothing that you think does not look good, and you'll see just how much of your identity is actually rooted in impressing other people. How much you care about the random person at Aldi who you pass, who you're never gonna ever talk to. But the fact that you're wearing green pants or whatever it is, like it just, like you feel silly, right? That day of choosing to suffer in some totally arbitrary way, it's gonna open you up to refinement from Jesus. So that 1 Peter 2:9, if you're going to do this challenge, write that verse down. It's little pieces of paper in front of you in the pew rack. Because that's one of many statements in the Bible where God says something about who we are. He gives us an identity. So if you wear something foolish or crazy this week, all day long, it's going to be tearing down this identity built on outward appearance. And it doesn't feel good. But all day long, you can pull out of the back pocket of your green pants or whatever. You know, you can pull out this index card with 1 Peter 2:9 on it and realize, like, Jesus has said, I'm a priest. Like, Jesus has said these like awesome things about who he's made me to be, like a bridge between him and other people. And you start to build your identity with Jesus. But don't kid yourself that you can keep your like cool guy identity and build your identity with Jesus and like keep them both and never have any, you know, never have any rainy days over here and just totally build with Jesus. You do have to tear down some of this comforting stuff on the other side. I'm not saying you got to dress lame every day for the rest of your life, but I'm saying you should experiment with this. There's some people that really, truly don't care what other people think about their appearance, and maybe I shouldn't encourage them on this route. But a lot of us think we're over it, and we're not. So it's worth experimenting with, okay? And it's just a day, and it's just a shirt or whatever, you know? So that's option number one. Some of you are like, I'm ready for two. I was ready for two as soon as I saw the jacket. But, okay. Option number two, 1 Peter 3:8, but it gets at this idea, this would be your verse to write down and reflect on through the day. What if you sat down somewhere that was uncomfortable to you? So whether it's our metal chairs down, you know, all over the building, physically uncomfortable, or what if it was just a socially uncomfortable spot? Think about when you go into a room, whether it's downstairs in Sunday school or somewhere else, we're normally looking for comfort for ourselves. We're looking for the best seat for ourselves. And you don't have to tell other people, like, oh man, I'm really bearing my cross today because I sat down next to all you guys and I'm uncomfortable with you guys. But the reality is, like, what if you did sit next to those people that you never sit by because they're 20 years younger than you, or they're 20 years older than you, or because whatever reason. The reality is, in that moment, this verse in 1 Peter talks about caring more about other people than you do about yourself. And if you're choosing to sit somewhere uncomfortable, or you're choosing to be around people you're not comfortable with, it actually is really easy to be selfless compared to if you're comfortable. Like, it's really easy to start listening to the people around you and caring about what they say instead of just thinking about what you're going to say next. Like, if you want to be Christ-like in a conversation, I would recommend, like, an uncomfortable chair, like, chosen for that reason. I'm going to suffer a little bit physically because Jesus suffered a lot physically. And I'm going to use this uncomfortable chair as a reminder that this conversation is not about making me feel good. That at the end of this conversation, you know, I need to be paying attention, not just soaking in some comfort. I need to be helping the people around me. So it can be hard to be that type of person who's so loving that you care about what the people around you say. I mean, honestly, like, a lot of us struggle with that. We do not listen well as a culture because we don't care enough as a culture. But you can't just be like, well, I'm going to care more. Like, you can't just snap your fingers and do it. So this is, if you choose an uncomfortable seating all day long and then you're reading 1 Peter 3:8 about caring about other people, you'll have a lot easier time. Like, that monkey that's on your back about, like, just care about yourself, think about how you can look cool, think about how you can look smart, like, it's like you straighten your back up, and it's hard for that temptation to stay on you. Like, it kind of falls off, and it's just because you chose a metal chair. I mean, it's really silly stuff, but we're physical people. We're spirit and body put together, and our spirits sometimes can benefit from just these very physical choices. So like I said, it's a door. It's not a command from Jesus. It's an opportunity to say, I'm going to experiment with this and try to be more like Jesus. Last one for us. Some of these will be hard for you and some of them won't be potentially. This one will be hard for some of you in the room. So 1 Peter 2:13 talks about obeying the government. And so what if you're the type of person like me who you think you can get a lot done, and you wind up being a busy person, and you think you're important, whether these things are true or not. This is how you think. I know it from the inside. So coming to a full stop at stop signs is hard when you're that type of person. Actually going 25 miles an hour, not 30, in your neighborhood is hard. there's that spot on I-70 as you're coming around that curve, like a little before I-35, like where they've got the little flashing light and the speed limit's like supposed, it's like 45 or something just ridiculous. Like no one goes that speed. The light is always flashing. They have to change those bulbs often, I bet. What if you went 45 around that curve? And a bunch of other people back up behind you, you know? But like, if you chose to say, like, I'm just going to submit to these government rules because I'm, as just a discipline of I'm not the boss of everything and I'm not that important and I don't need to be in a hurry. I know from experience, I've been experimenting with this, is like it changes you when you show up where you're going. It's easier to pray if you're a type of person that struggles with hurry. It's easier to stop and pray if you've been obeying the speed limit and if you've come to a complete stop like 7 times in the last like 15 minutes or whatever, you know. It's easier. It's easier to be genuinely in the moment with someone if you've done this, right? So these are very random things I've thrown out to you today, but the question for you is like, do you want to go on this path? I remember being in an accountability group with a group of guys, and we were all struggling with the same sin. And I was in that group for more than a year, and some of us had victory and some of us didn't. And some of you have probably been around this, if you go to a lot of AA meetings or something like that. Sometimes you can start to get a radar, who's gonna make it and who's not. And I'm not meaning like, let's be prideful and judgmental of other people, but the indicator for me in our small group, what I saw, is the people who hated the thing they were struggling with, they're the ones that made it. The ones that were really willing to take other people's advice and do all this craziness because they hated the sin in themselves. They hated it so much, they were willing to kind of do whatever it took. Those are the ones who made it. So it's real easy to look at. I mean, Jake is silly and Jake speeds too much and like to just walk out of this room without any real plan. But freedom from sin really is possible. Jesus really will make you the type of person where these sins like have a hard time sticking on you, where your back's not bent over anymore. Like, it's just, it doesn't take much mental effort to not do the things that you still always have to struggle with. Like, Jesus will take you there, but it's a lot of steps and it's a lot of contrary action. So Daniel and the worship team are going to be coming up. Here's your chance to respond. There's no starter coat for you to put on to show off. They're like, oh, yep, I'm real. Like how we spend our time and if we're up for contrary action, like that shows, are we really into this Jesus thing? And so one big humble step that you could take is come down front and pray with somebody. You can come down and pray about anything, but why not say like, this is something I'm struggling with and I'm not so prideful to think I can do it on my own. Like I need some help. So come down front and pray. We've got a bunch of small group leaders, the coaches, their wives, a bunch of people down here to pray with you. Let's pray. Jesus, I thank you that you paid all the cost for us and that all these little things we talked about today, they are just baby steps to what you did for us, how you suffered for us. And so Jesus, I pray that you would take us on a journey to be fully like you, to be your brother, your sister. It's in your name we pray. Amen.